Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Chronicles of Nannia, a nanny resource podcast made for nannies by me, a nanny. I am your host, Martha Reddick, and this week we are going to be talking temperament styles with Katie Leinecke. Hi, Katie.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm super great.
Katie and I have been hanging out for a while, so get ready. It was wonderful to see you.
It's been delightful.
And
we're recording later than we had anticipated because of it, but
it's
worth it.
It's still really great.
Yeah.
Friendship.
And caffeine tomorrow.
Yeah. Indeed. But yes, so we decided to record this episode actually based on the International Nanny Training Day. Mm-hmm. And so temperament styles came up during our positive discipline talk in answering or attempting to answer a question.
They were kind of the star of the show, too. We got sidetracked.
We did. And so then we were like, oh, maybe there's a desire for a whole episode just on temperament styles, which I didn't know very much about this before I started researching. So I'm excited to talk about it with you.
Spoiler alert, this is that episode.
Yeah.
And it's not really spoiler because you already told them.
But still. and it's the title. So when they click
Get
on it,
ready.
They probably saw it. But maybe. Who knows? Maybe people.
Blind podcasting, you know.
Yeah, like Russian roulette podcasting.
Just scroll and pick.
Well, if you're joining us and have never listened before, Katie Leinecke is a frequent guest. Katie, can you give us just a brief background?
I have been a nanny for so long, all 7 years. And at some point I went back to school to get a teaching certificate. And now I both teach and nanny.
Yes.
That's super brief.
That was the briefest.
Yeah.
If you would like to hear more of Katie's background, you can listen to any of her previous episodes because she does it for us every time and I appreciate
it. Not always. Sometimes if it's back to back, you just heard it in the last episode.
You don't need it.
Yeah.
Well, wonderful. If you're joining us for the first time, Katie Leinecke's episodes are all delightful. Listen to them all. Just binge listen.
It's gonna be great.
So how are temperament styles determined?
That is a good question. So there are two different things when you're talking about temperament, which is actually translates to like 12 different things. So there are temperament traits, mm-hmm. and there are temperament styles.
Okay.
And there are three temperament styles. And there are 9 temperament traits.
Nice.
So when you add them together, you get 12.
Yeah.
But the 9 traits help you to determine which temperament style you fall under.
Okay.
So those traits are activity level. That's usually like your body functions. Are you very active? Are you running around? Or are you kind of more sedentary? Or somewhere in between.
Right.
Do you have to bob your leg? Do you need to always be doodling? Do you...
Or the kids that you see, like, do the flappy arms?
Yes, yes. Do you never want to get up? Are you very slow to move?
Mm.
That's one. That's activity level.
Okay.
2 is biological regularity, which basically means the schedule with which you eat, sleep, and poop.
Great, yeah.
So... this is most commonly seen with infants, or sometimes you can see it with older children too. Children who have trouble sleeping, children who have don't go to the bathroom with any regularity, or children who maybe aren't hungry at their mealtimes, even if you have set mealtimes. So that's part of it. That's number two. Number three is adaptability.
Okay.
How flexible are they when things change, when there's an unexpected thing that you need to do? Four is approach / withdrawal. So how friendly are they to strangers? Are they super friendly? Are they avoidant of strangers? Do they cry and scream? Are they slow to warm up?
Right.
Spoiler alert, that is one of the temperament styles. Then there's number five, which is the sensitivity threshold. Okay. So how much of a stimulus does it take to get a response from you, either a positive or a negative response? So if something is like poking you, how long does it take for you to get upset? If something is funny, how long does it take for you to laugh?
Okay.
Six is intensity of emotional response. So once you get that emotional response, are they very, very emotional, or are they, do they have lower emotional responses or somewhere in between? Seven, I think we're on, is distractibility. So. So how likely are they to be distracted from a task when an unexpected stimulus happens? So if I'm reading and a car horn honks, how likely am I to stop reading or cleaning up or eating because something else has happened?
Right.
Eight is quality of mood, like how often are they feeling positive versus negative moods?
Mm-hmm.
And then nine is persistence / attention span. So how long can they do something, an unfavorable task, or a favorable one?
Right.
And those nine things, they help you to determine a child or adult's temperament style, which is kind of like an inherent personality.
Right.
So the research behind this, many scientists and psychologists have researched this and added to it, but the original people are called Thomas and Chess.
Okay.
And in the 1920s, at least this particular style of temperament explanation. Mm-hmm. In the 1920s, they started doing longitudinal research, and they have found that your temperament style is pretty much consistent throughout your whole life.
Really?
So it's like an innate personality. So a lot of times parents or nannies or whoever will be like, the child came out with a personality, and it's true, and it's your temperament. So the temperament styles, which are like the basic categories, are, they used to be called easy, slow to warm up, and difficult. And for obvious reasons, they're trying to shift the language to flexible, fearful, and feisty.
Okay.
So
I like that.
Yeah.
I like feisty.
Yeah. I don't know if I like fearful though. I think I prefer slow to warm up, but
yeah,
I agree.
We could pick and choose.
I think. So for the purposes of this podcast, let's call it flexible, slow to warm up, and feisty.
Great.
So, and the other thing here is there are no right or wrong temperaments or better or worse temperaments. They are just different temperaments.
Right.
So yeah, that's kind of a so brief snapshot of what temperament is.
But it was, and I mean, everything that you just talked about, that was pretty brief.
Yes.
So
good for me. Pat on the back for all of you and me.
So let's talk about goodness of fit.
Yes.
Because that came up in my research a bunch.
Yes. So goodness of fit is when you either have a good fit with the caregiver's personality and temperament style, or you have a less than snugly fit together temperament style. So some research will talk about like how active you are, right? So if your activity level, which is a trait, is very high as the caregiver, and you have a child or you're caring for a child whose activity level is very low, that's going to cause a fair amount of frustration for you because you're naturally, innately different.
Right.
And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have similar temperament styles, you're going to get along a little bit easier than if you don't. And that's called goodness of fit. So how well suited are your temperaments to get along? If there is a mismatch of temperament styles, the adult is always the one who must adjust their temperament style for the child because the child is a child.
Right.
So they're just childing around. You can't, they don't have the skills to, they need to know that you love them and accept them.
Mm-hmm.
which is all great, but can be really hard. Like, yes. I think all of you would get on board with the idea of like, yes, I want the child that I care for or my own personal children to know that I love them and support them. And even when we aren't getting along, I want to work together. But it's actually harder in real life.
Right.
As I'm sure all of you have experienced. So the adult will always adjust or should always adjust for the child. So sometimes if it's like biological regularity, like, okay, this child doesn't go to the bathroom at a regular interval. What can I do to help this child when they do need to?
Right.
Or maybe sleeping is hard for this child. I actually have worked with a family before. Some nights they go to bed and their daughter isn't asleep yet. And their daughter is 6. She'll be 7.
Wow.
Great kid. Mm-hmm. Great parents. They have another child who goes to sleep just as soon as you shut the door. So different temperament.
Yeah.
And they have different views on the world. They're both super fun and very active. So their activity levels are both really high, but their biological regularity is different.
Right.
And the daughter, in fact, at meals, sometimes might not eat at all. Sometimes might eat everything you give her and ask for like bacon and a cheeseburger in addition to it.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's really fascinating how they're like sliding scales almost.
Yeah.
And so they can be dialed way up or dialed way down when you're born.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's not one specific set, but like the mass of traits.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you have a lot of traits that are slow to warm up, but you also have a few, like maybe you're also, you have a lot of biological regularity or your activity level is low or high or whatever it is. No one trait makes you a specific temperament style,
mm-hmm.
but it's sort of like the continuum of your traits, like where you fall all across them
mm-hmm.
and they weigh you into which one you're most like. Because
right.
very few children will be all one or the other.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like almost all personality tests, yeah. I think you're kind of in a zone.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, that's so interesting. So can you talk more about which traits
mm-hmm.
lead to which temperament? So like which side of which traits? And I know that
sure.
we can't.
Yes. We'll go through the 9 and we'll talk about how they tend to fall.
Great.
And there's also research on this. So activity level, if you are higher in your activity level zone, you tend to be in the feisty range.
Right.
Also, if you're extremely low in the activity, you could also end up in the feisty, but it's more high activity and feisty.
Yeah.
Low activities and slow to warm up.
Yeah. Energy to get out.
Yeah, exactly. And then if you're like in the middle in your activity range, you are the flexible child.
Right.
Biological regularity, high regularity is the flexible child
mm-hmm.
Or easy. So sometimes it helps if you think of their original names for these temperaments. So it's easy because you know when they're going to eat, you know when they're going to sleep. They go to sleep for 3 hours every day at 10 a.m. and then they wake up and then they have a meal and then they go back to sleep after they've pooped.
Yep.
So that's easy, air quotes. You can't see, but I'm air quoting.
She is.
Which I probably say confirm. In every episode as well.
Yeah, but I love
it. So that's biological regularity. The feisty or quote unquote difficult child is very irregular. You have no predictable body rhythms of that child. That's very hard. Slow to warm up can sort of fall between any of those categories. Tends to be more in the regular side of like more regular rhythms to their
and
functions.
And you can imagine for a child that could be disconcerting too. So I can understand why the ones that aren't on any sort of schedule might fall more into feisty.
Your body feels like chaos.
Yeah. Because you're like, I don't know when I'm going to go poop.
I might be hungry. I think I'm tired. Tired again. Too tired.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Because it is hard to feel like your body's not, you don't trust it basically.
Right. Yeah.
We talk about that in setting boundaries with children
mm-hmm.
and we will talk about it in this temperament podcast, but structure and guidelines help children feel safe and even in your body rhythms, it helps you feel safe. And think about feeling constipated, listeners. It feels bad.
It does.
Yes. Yep. Yes. So that's biological regularity. Adaptability is the third trait. And so we talked about that's how flexible you are to changes. Obviously, the easy or flexible child is extremely flexible.
Right.
You're like, hey, change of plans. We actually have to go to the grocery store. I said we were going to play. And they're like, great, okay, whatever. Hope there's samples. But the difficult child has a really, has a really hard time adjusting to changes. They need a lot of warning that something's going to happen, that it's not going to be what you expected. We talk about this later too, or we will.
Yeah.
How to support a child who struggles with adaptability.
Right.
Because
we do. We know those kids.
Yes. And that's why you see many nannies being like 5 minutes, 2 minutes, 3 minutes. A child who's slow to warm up or fearful. Again, I don't like the fearful label. Yeah. They're slow to warm up. So they will adapt and eventually they'll have a positive response usually, not always because they're not robots. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes they'll get there, but they might not like it at first or they might not be thrilled, which is another reason why time warnings are super helpful for anybody caring for children. If you can let them know that something's going to change soon, that would be great.
Yeah.
Also adding structure to your day can really help you for a person who or a child who has a temperament style that is lower on the flexibility and adaptability range because they know what's going to happen. This is the time we run errands. Like this is when we go to the park and play. This is when I have to have a bath. It helps them to know. And you can do visual things for a child if they're too young and show them the pictures. This is what we do. So they can internalize that too.
Yeah. And I have found because, you know, we are shifting into summer. Shifting gears.
Party.
Which is kind of party-like, but
it's like a party for 10 hours that never stops.
Yep. Yes, it is. But I have found that we are starting to use breakfast as kind of this morning meeting of what are we going to do today?
Yeah.
Because sometimes I have plans for them. Sometimes
they have their own plans.
Sometimes their parents have plans. Mm. And so we use that time in the morning to kind of plot
out the
whole day.
Yeah.
Because there isn't as much structure.
Yeah.
And going from school, which is pretty structured.
Yeah.
To no school and they are very confused about when the weekends are.
Yeah, they're like Maggie Smith's character in Downton Abbey. What is a weekend?
Yes, exactly.
Nice.
And so
they're living that life.
And so yes, I find that no matter the temperament, letting children know the general plan.
Well, and that probably also helps your temperament style.
Yes.
Knowing what to expect is huge for me.
Me too.
And later we can talk about our temperament styles if you feel so inclined.
Great.
But I, as a caregiver, it might be very important for you to know what to expect too. So yeah, that's for sure. That would be a very useful. A lot of times with the child I nanny for now, I'm like, so here are the things we need to do. I'm gonna talk to you about what's happening for the rest of the afternoon.
Right.
And I'm like, we need to do this, that, and the other. This we can play to how do you want to divide it up?
Yes.
Because that also is a great tool for working with a child who might be slower to warm up and the child I'm with is highly flexible, but they're still a person who has opinions and desires about what they want to do with their day. So
for sure.
So yeah, so that's adaptability. Approach withdrawal, which was the fourth trait. Did you get your question answered before
that?
I did.
Good?
Okay.
Yeah, thank
you. Children who will approach strangers with total ease are generally the flexible child. Mm-hmm. Also not super great as a caregiver. You're like, I want you to be kind to other people, but I don't want you to like jump in their van and go with them if they show you their dog.
Or help them find a puppy.
Yes, exactly.
Children should never help adults.
Yeah, well, that's a great, seriously.
But yeah, they've switched from stranger danger to tricky adults.
Yeah.
Or
And they say, too, like, most kids will not accept candy from a stranger and they'll run away because they've been taught that. But they will go with a stranger who's looking for a dog or has a dog.
Yes. So this is just a little PSA to talk to your kids about how they should never be asked to help an adult that they don't know.
And yes. And I tell the children that I nanny for, too, because they're like, will you pick me up? I'm like, yes, it will literally always be me or another adult you already know.
Yeah.
I said, your parents will never send someone you do not know to pick you up unless they have told you about it beforehand.
Right.
They will never do that.
Yep.
Because it's not safe.
Yep.
And so that helps them to be like, if an adult comes, because that was a big thing my mom talked about. She was like, you never go with a person, even if they say my first and last name, you never go with them if you don't know them. Do you understand? But that's, I mean, as a kid, you don't know.
Right.
So
yeah.
It's you're worth, like, oh, you know my mom? Okay.
It's worth talking
She said to come
about.
With you.
Yes.
Yeah. So Side a note. Lot of approach, while flexible in temperament style, not always the greatest.
Right.
The opposite of that is the withdrawal.
Yeah.
And like the extreme withdrawal, kicking, screaming, crying, mm-hmm. don't talk to me, I hate you. to strangers, that would be the feisty child.
Right.
And somewhere in the middle, the standoffish at first, but then slowly warms up would be the slow to warm up.
And in the course of life, I think that for this particular trait is yes. the safest.
Yeah. Dating.
yes.
New jobs. Yes. So there's, and that's like goes back to the idea that there isn't one good or bad temperament.
Right.
And you can be up and down the scale on these traits too. So you might have like a lot of hyper activity, mm-hmm. but you might also be like super, you might have a medium threshold for intensity of emotion, right?
Yeah.
So it's like
yeah.
you could be on both ends of the spectrum and right. it's okay.
Yes.
okay. So sensitivity thresholds. I don't remember what number we're on, but I could count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 is the fifth one. So uh-huh. we talked about that's how much stimulus it takes to get a response from a child.
Right.
So, if you have a very low sensitivity threshold, that's feisty. Mm-hmm. So like a book drops and they start screaming, low sensitivity threshold. That's feisty. It can be more challenging for the caregiver.
Oh, my stepdad has that.
Yeah.
That particular trait.
It's interesting,
if
isn't it?
Like a door slams, he gets, you see
agitated.
Him get upset.
Yeah. It's really fascinating. It stays with you.
Yeah.
I think that's so interesting. I wonder if you asked him if he would say like, yes, I've had that my whole life.
Probably.
Yeah.
He's had it my whole life. So.
I wonder too if he would be that way throughout all like stimulus, like if it's just noises or if it's like noises and like how itchy something is. So like it has to do with like your body as well. Yeah. Like it's basically your sensory input.
Yeah.
And how much input does it take to get some kind of response from you?
Yeah.
So, like somebody who doesn't like a lot of bold flavors, mm-hmm. they might have a lower sensitivity threshold because, mm-hmm. they're like, ah, this is too much
right.
flavor. So they might eat more bland foods. Mm-hmm. So that's feisty. A higher sensitivity threshold can be, I mean, this is kind of like one of those two where it's like it kind of depends on how it pairs with other traits. So usually like the medium here for this one is like, because you, if something hurts you, right. You should respond. So that can be slow to warm up or it could be flexible. Mm-hmm. Certainly having a high sensitivity threshold can be a sign of many other like things going on with the child that you should probably have a specialist look at because it can run with sensory input issues where like your brain isn't processing your sensory input. So at that point, I would recommend seeing an OT, which is an occupational therapist. so that's a whole nother issue. Like if you're touching something hot and you don't notice or you see the child needs a lot of squeezing or running into things, some children will hit their head into walls because they have a low sensitivity threshold or a high sensitivity threshold.
Right.
And they're looking for input and they're not getting it because their threshold's so high.
Yeah.
So sometimes you see it on the autism spectrum, mm-hmm. But also it can just be a sensory issue.
Yeah.
In which case an OT can help you get a sensory diet for the child. So
yep.
worth it. Six is intensity of emotional response. So once you do, like we said, get that response, what does it look like? Is it, and this can be for the feisty child, it's a high emotional response, and that can be positive or negative.
Right.
They can like scream and laugh and be delighted, mm-hmm. or they can scream and cry and be very upset, mm. or scream and be enraged, or
yeah.
it's just like the intensity is like through the roof. So high tends to be feisty. Low, I guess it could be slow to warm up. Yeah. That one's kind of more in the, it has more flexibility than the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then for, my brain is like a jumble of like all these words because I'm saying them so much.
We're yeah. juggling flexible. Nine yeah. things.
Yes. The flexible child tends to be sort of appropriately paired, if you will. Not okay. really, but like their responses seem to fit what's happened.
Right.
Although I would say personally that all responses often fit it because there's an emotional thing happening for the child.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly your behavior is different than your emotional response. So that's
right.
some gray area there. Like you're not, you can't control your feelings, but you can control how you act. So yes. there's a line, which we can talk about too, when we talk about supporting these temperament styles, yeah. Distractibility. So if you, have high distractibility, you're usually on the feisty threshold. Yeah. If you have low distractibility, that can be flexible. That can be slow to warm up. Also in the middle, it can be flexible or slow to warm up.
Mm-hmm.
Also, sometimes you want your child to be distractible because
right.
you might be trying to speak to them.
Yes.
And they might just be reading, playing, just tuning you out, basically, because they're so
literally
focused.
Don't hear you.
Yeah, exactly. So that's
I've been experiencing that yeah, a lot lately.
Yeah, it's hard because it's so frustrating as an adult. I know we talked about that mm-hmm. at International Nanny Training Day about yeah. like sometimes it takes an additional new stimulus, not just your voice, but like touching them or getting next to them so that they can see you,
mm-hmm.
so that it brings you back into their world for a minute.
Yeah.
So that can be both.
I did the what color are my eyes today
oh, did it
trick.
Work?
And but then he was like, what color are my eyes today?
You're like, another good question.
Yes.
Were they different than usual or were they the same?
They were the same, but I
you
tried to make it
that.
Special.
Tell them about the trick.
Oh, so the trick is when you want to tell a child something and they are seem distracted, that you get down on their level and say, hey, what color are my eyes today? Because a lot of times kids don't know that eyes stay the same
yeah.
color. But I was told that my eyes were black.
See,
so.
Yeah, you get a lot of interesting answers too.
And my eyes are green.
You have like hazily though, I
do.
Would count.
So
yours kind of changed.
Mine are
girl
kind
with
of
kaleidoscope
tricky.
Eyes.
Yeah. But black was not what I expected. Yeah. But
sometimes you get white too. You're like, yeah. well, that's true. That's
yeah.
accurate. Yeah.
Part of them are
yeah.
white.
And
yeah.
that helps them too to know that this is not like an admonishment. You're
yeah,
like
you're
just
not in
needing
trouble.
Them to listen.
Yeah. yeah. You just got to talk to them about something
yeah.
for a minute.
And usually the children will crack a smile too.
Yes.
And they'll be like, what color are your eyes today?
yep. And then sometimes ask
yes.
you what color their eyes
yes,
are.
Yes, I love that.
Me too.
That's awesome. So, yes, great tip for limiting the effect of distractibility.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
And then 8 is quality of mood. So how often are they in a positive or negative mood?
Right.
And in between, slow to warm ups, usually in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Flexible is usually on the positive range.
Mm-hmm.
And feisty is usually on the negative range. Mm-hmm. Although certainly all those children can experience all those emotions.
Right.
Because that's how humans work. and then the last one is persistence/attention span. Typically the flexible child can work and the slow to warm up child can work for longer on specific activities. Without being distracted because the distractibility is in there, right?
Right.
So, and typically the feisty child, will be more likely. Actually, that's not true. I think they can fall on both ends of the spectrum.
Okay.
So they can
yeah,
either be extremely persistent, so much so that it's like, please just let me help you. Or they can be on the other
I
end
can't
of the,
do it.
Yes, exactly. So
and
it can,
are some children, do they just live at both ends of that spectrum?
Sometimes, yeah.
yeah.
So sometimes you want help, but you don't want help.
Right.
Me too.
Yeah, me too.
And that's how I live sometimes. I'm like, yeah. I wanted you to help, but I didn't want to have to tell you. It took me a long time to stop dating like that.
Yeah.
I was like, and then they'll do the thing. This is my dating life. They'll be like, oh, well, I did it. And I'll be like, well, no, I don't even want you to because I had to tell you. Right? So like, that's kind of one of those things with like persistence and, you know.
Yep.
But it's like you can want both because we're complex.
Yeah.
Complex, beautiful souls.
Yes.
So yeah. Does that help?
That helped kind of a walkthrough? So much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And so it matters too, because you're like, well, Katie, you said some of them count for both. And they do. And it matters in relationship to the other nine traits.
Right.
So if you, some might be like middle of the road and they could go either way, but depending on how your other eight traits would fall, you would be categorized into one of these temperament styles.
Great.
Yeah.
That was very helpful.
You're welcome.
So let's talk about how we support these temperament styles.
Yeah. Because
that's our job.
I would love that. So first, I would love to start with the flexible child because it can be easy to overlook this child, right?
Yeah.
Because this child is positive, we've heard, regular. With their body functions, they sleep regularly. They
are mostly in a good mood.
Yes, they're usually able to be highly focused at a task, low distractibility. Their activity level sort of at homeostasis for the most part. So it's easy to be like, that kid's fine without me, right? And like kind of
go live your life.
Yeah. And if you have multiple personality, temperament styles, I should say, because personality style is different.
Yeah.
If you have multiple temperament styles in the same household and one is feisty or slow to warm up, in addition to this quote unquote easy or flexible child, it can be very easy to put that child on a back burner.
Right. Yeah.
I would say don't do that.
Yeah.
each child needs your time and attention. They need personalized time and attention and affection, no matter what temperament style they are.
Right.
So just making sure, I mean, that's really the main thing you can do for this temperament style is make sure that they are getting time and attention with you. Also, make sure that you're touching base with them about maybe something that's negative in their life too, so that they can share these feelings, because they might be there, but they might not pop up as often.
Right.
So,
and they might not have as much practice with sharing it or with
words.
Yeah, yeah. Or with needing to ask for that help.
Absolutely.
Because they haven't had to before.
Yeah.
So I would think that when an obstacle comes up for them, it might be
they don't
harder.
Know. Yeah. They don't know. Exactly.
And then they have outgrown the age that you would maybe quote unquote normally talk about that or jump in to help them. And so you're like, you'll figure it out. And they're like, but I've never done this.
Literally
before.
Had no practice. Yeah. Seriously.
Yeah.
So that's
just
a great
keeping
suggestion.
That in mind that this particular one, as they come up against things, might need a little bit more help because they haven't had as much practice.
Yeah. And because they don't present many red flags. So it's easy to put their development in those social emotional areas on a back burner, but they need just as much encouragement and guidance as the others. Sometimes the others will need a different kind of support from you, but they're still a child and they still have feelings. And it's even with a flexible personality or temperament style, I wonder how many times I'm going to say that tonight. Even with a flexible temperament style, you can still experience great pain and sadness and frustration, and people are going to do things to you that you don't like. And even if you're adaptable and you can let it go later, you're still going to have to deal with and process those emotions. So that's really important.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me that the flexible temperament style is potentially where a lot of the people pleasers live.
Yeah, I could see that. I haven't done any personal longitudinal research, but I could see that very easily because also I think slow to warm up could as well.
Yeah.
Although they're probably less likely to jump on board immediately. But because if you tend to be more quote unquote go with the flow.
Right.
And usually more positive, so you're more likely to cater to other people maybe, especially if there's a bolder temperament style living in your house or in your classroom or happens to be your best friend, because all these temperament styles get along with each other.
Yeah.
And or sometimes they don't, but sometimes they do. And sometimes you might be married to someone with a drastically different temperament, or my boyfriend has a drastically different temperament than me. even like sleep functions and how he eats and like time of like he like no schedule for that one. Right. And I'm like highly scheduled. Let's plan out my day to the 15-minute intervals.
Yeah.
So we're very different, but we love each other. He's amazing.
Right.
So sometimes they can help each other grow and they can be naturally attractive to each other.
Right. So yeah. I just was thinking about that because that's something, you know, you and I struggle with.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of nannies are potential people pleasers.
Yeah.
And so just keeping that in mind.
That's true.
It might not be, like, create more people pleasers.
It might be good to help them learn boundaries in that way about like how do you. So maybe that's the goal also for this easy / flexible temperament is to how do you help them say no to people?
Yeah.
And how do you help them know when they really do or don't want to do something? And like, because that's a hard barometer to read, especially if people have mowed it down your whole life. So yeah, that's a really great suggestion.
Yeah, thanks.
You're like, it's like I do this professionally.
I learned from watching you.
No, I'm sure that's not true.
But if you're listening to this and you're like, oh, my nanny kid is totally in the flexible category or one of them or both of them or all of them, then I would suggest listening to the boundaries episode because I think that that would be helpful in helping support that child.
The boundaries episode will also help you with the feisty temperament, I will say, for how you are willing to be treated.
Right.
Because everyone must know that there are limits to what everyone will tolerate behavior-wise.
Yep. So just go listen to the boundaries episode.
And the power struggles
one. If you haven't listened to it in a while, just like listen to it again. and yes, the power struggles
power
one
struggles
will also
really
help.
Good.
Power struggles with kids, power struggles with parents.
Yeah.
Because parents also have temperament
I loved all
styles.
Those episodes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Great. So let's talk about slow to warm up.
Yes.
How we can support them.
So slow to warm up, this is primarily where you need a lot of warnings for like 5 minutes until we leave. Sometimes I do like, I'm going to warn you at 10 minutes and 5 minutes and 2 minutes before I even get to, like, I'm like, this is how this is going to go down.
Right.
So mentioning to the children what your plan is. Be very clear with them about what's going to happen. Some of these are similar for the feisty temperament too. So some experts suggest rehearsing anticipated changes or uncomfortable things. So if you're starting at a new school, maybe for a week, you drive up to the school, you walk up to the door, and then you're like, and this is what will happen next.
Right.
And so they have something in their mind. So they're, because the warming up period is happening before school starts.
Right.
So on the first day of school, it's an easier transition for you because you've already put in the work. So that's something that I would recommend. And other people would recommend. Try not to pressure the child to kiss grandma or shake hands or give this stranger a hug. First of all, body autonomy.
Yeah.
And secondly, they're going to warm up is the whole idea here is that you don't need to call them shy.
Mm-hmm.
You can just they just like to take their time when they're meeting new people.
Right.
And the less of a big deal you make about it, the more accepted that child's going to feel and the more safe they're going to feel, which is going to make them more likely to warm up. But if they feel forced, they're going to dig in deeper and withdraw further.
Right.
Because who likes to be forced to do something?
Not I.
No one. Yeah. I don't know anybody who is like, I love it.
Yeah.
And then some of the other tactics that we're going to talk about are feisty and slow to warm up.
Okay,
so
great.
We can transition to that.
Transition right in.
Okay. This one is where I have the most notes I wrote down. And that's probably because it's where a lot of caregivers struggle the most is how to care for and love and help the feisty children grow.
Mm-hmm.
How to help them have not an easier life, but more natural responses and social interactions that are pro-social, right? How do I encourage sharing and kindness and honesty? Those are called pro-social skills, which leads into a bigger thing called democratic life skills, which is what preschool teachers teach.
Yeah.
And that's why the more money you or for every dollar you spend on quality early childhood education, I think in California, they did a study, you save like hundreds of thousands of dollars per
person.
Yeah. For penitentiary fees. So I'd have to look that up. Maybe we can link you to it on the page, but it's like it's because they're learning these pro-social skills, these democratic life skills.
Right. And just so you guys listening know that this temperament style, feisty, yeah. is the reason that we're doing this, because we had a question about a baby who was just consistently crying.
Yes.
There was nothing like the
no colic.
The nanny was like, I've fed her or him. I can't remember.
I think it's a boy.
I fed him. He's well rested. Yeah. I pick him up and then he's happy for a few minutes and then he doesn't want to be up anymore.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's where all of this started.
And it's stressful too. That nanny expressed fear of being like, I'm afraid the mom's going to fire me.
Right.
And the mom has a nanny cam and the mom's like, he's crying. Why is he crying? And she's like, I don't know what to say. Cause I don't know.
Right.
That is something they talk about too in temperament styles. Like if you have cared for the fundamental needs, if the child is clean, if the child's, and when I say clean, I mean diaper change,
right.
nothing. If there's no hair tourniquets on their toes, that's when a piece of hair wraps around so tight and cuts off circulation and it's really painful.
Yeah.
So if a baby's screaming uncontrollably and you don't know why, check for hair tourniquets on the fingers and toes.
And on the penis.
Oh, I guess I've never managed a baby boy.
I read about that.
Yeah.
That can be a problem.
Yeah. That sounds
because
even worse than your toe.
I have long curly hair.
Yeah.
And so I worry about that.
Yeah. Smart.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Yeah.
And if the child is well fed, no hair tourniquets on their private areas or toes and fingers. That was such a vivid image too.
I'm
having trouble moving on. If they're
but
fed,
I just
if they're not,
felt like that was worth mentioning.
It definitely,
because it could be a problem,
and it would be overlooked too because
yes.
it's covered,
right?
For sure. And I will move beyond the image of it.
Okay, thank you.
I'm getting to the part where it's like, oh no,
right?
Something is wrong.
if they are all their basic needs are
met. Exactly, and you've checked that they're not too hot and they're not too cold. Sometimes it's okay to just let that baby cry.
Right.
And know that this is the baby.
And be there with them.
Yes.
Like you're there.
Yes. And I personally believe in cool down time. So if your frustration level is rising too high, go to the other room, take a few breaths. But also know it's not a reflection on you.
Right.
If this is the baby's temperament, it's okay. It's okay that the baby's crying. So long as you've met all the fundamental needs. So that's for if it's like really a baby, but also sometimes for older children too.
Right.
So if they're older and even like slow to warm up, and I would say easy as well, give the children words for what you see them experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
So, a flexible child who maybe wouldn't complain about having an itchy sweater or a feisty child who's screaming about it, or a slow to warm up child who hasn't said anything yet. They're not sure they want to. You can be like, hey, I'm noticing you're scratching your arms and legs or arms and shoulders a lot. Maybe that shirt is itchy. Is that shirt too itchy? Would you like to change?
Uh-huh.
So you help them realize like, oh, there is a problem. We could solve it. And I think that's beneficial for all the children involved. Or, hey, this soup seems too hot for you. Maybe we should put an ice cube in it. And you can even say like, I'm noticing because you put it in your mouth and then you make a face, or you put it in your mouth and then you like open your mouth back up and drop all the soup out.
Yeah.
So,
or make a noise.
Yes.
Or, whatever you're observing.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the child then realizes too, especially if you say it in that tone of voice where there's no judgment involved or emotional response from you, which is like a key. The child doesn't feel judged.
Right.
And the child's like, oh, hey, that is a problem. They're more likely to calm down. So encouraging self-awareness and coping strategies for a feisty child is really helpful, and slow to warm up to be like, hey, this is what I've noticed. Like, it seems to be hard for you when we go to swim lessons, or what do you think might help you in this time? And then like, let's talk about why is that hard for you? What are you? Are you afraid? Do you just not like it? Slow to warm up children and feisty children benefit from goodbye routines. I don't know if, and even, flexible children do. I put flexible in quotes, but I was going to say easy, but my brain changed it.
Nice.
Beforehand. So no need for the air quotes. Flexible children too. As a teacher, we preach this and preach this, and especially for the parents who have trouble dropping their kids off, or nannies. Nannies are usually better at it than parents. to have a routine. say like, I give you 5 pushes on the swings, or I give you a hug and a kiss and a high five, and then I leave.
Right.
And then you must actually leave, because it helps the child know what to expect. It's creating structure. It's creating expectations. And that helps the child, especially if they're slow to warm up and or feisty, because they know this is happening and then that's going to happen.
Right.
So they know what to expect. So it's less scary. It takes a lot of the fear out of it. They know it's time to transition. And we as teachers, we cannot preach it enough. Right. Works in swim lessons, works in ice skating lessons. I mean, and it could be something that the child comes up with. You could come up with it together. Both
when
work.
They get older, you can have a cool handshake.
Yes. And I recommend handshakes and things like that. I think that's great. I don't recommend it being reliant on another human.
Right.
Like when Sarah gets to class, we'll leave. Because what happens when Sarah's absent one day, right? So, or don't make the handshake with Sarah. It's your goodbye routine. You two do the handshake. You guys go.
Because I will tell a brief story about when I was a child.
Please do.
And I always got picked up before my best friend, Emily.
Yeah.
As a child, or my good friend.
Yeah.
I don't like best friend. I don't like that
title.
True. Yeah. So my really good friend and like my aftercare buddy, Emily. But I always got picked up first because my mom got off work slightly before her mom.
Yeah.
And so, but one day, Emily got picked up first. And so I thought my mom had forgotten about me. It turns out Emily just had a doctor's appointment.
Tragedy.
But she was already gone. Oh, no. And so she couldn't relay that information. Yeah. The aftercare teachers didn't know. Oh. And so but they were like, no, your mom usually comes at this time. But I was so far gone emotionally at that point that I wasn't able to
hear
that.
Too hard to come back up the ledge.
Yeah. But yes. So don't make it about another person.
Yeah. I mean, seriously.
Because
that will happen. Emily will leave before you. And then you'll be... driving straight off the cliff. Yeah. That's a great story.
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, not great at the time, but I like it now.
Yeah, now it teaches an important lesson.
Yeah. Similarly, I don't know if this counts quite the same. I am always early to pick up the child I nanny for. Mm-hmm. Although sometimes I come on time, but when I do that, the child I nanny for thinks I'm late and oftentimes cries. Because they're like, where were you? And I'm like, it's literally the time that I'm allowed to pick you up. I'm just usually here 5 minutes before because it's my job.
Too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. It's been interesting. And one of her teachers was like, you should try picking her up at different times and intentionally being late because it will help her cope. Mm-hmm. Which I haven't quite tied. I do. If there's a flexible pickup time, sometimes I will vary it for her. Right. And she's grown a lot in that regard. So maybe,
that's great.
And I would say she's a flexible child. So maybe they need help sometimes.
Right.
With certain things.
Yep.
Yeah. But yeah.
Well, I mean, that is like we talked about.
We all
that
have.
They,
they have personalities.
Even flexible children need you to pay attention.
Yes. And they have preferences for sure. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Let's see where we are on my full list of things. So you should always give personalized time, attention, and affection to all the temperament styles. Mm-hmm. Focus on the children's strengths and avoid name calling. Even labeling a child in a positive way is not beneficial.
Right.
And I will tell you why.
Please do.
So in teaching, in early childhood education, we have a phrase called labeling is disabling. Mm-hmm. And it is, because even a positive label makes you anxious. Mm-hmm. So if it's a positive label, if someone's like, I really like that, you're always on time. Avoid phrases like always and never. Mm-hmm. Because what happens when you're not? Then you feel you're like that person's affection for you is conditional.
Right.
You also will label yourself with names that people have given you over the years. And I don't know about you, Martha, or you people listening, but it has taken me years to undo the labels that people have given to me that don't actually apply.
Right.
As a grown woman.
Yeah.
It's taken me years
to
undo
that.
Or even
if they do apply, because you're a complex person and a label puts you in a box and puts expectations on you. And you're totally right. Even positive ones.
Yeah. And it's also, it can be offensive too, if you label incorrectly. So like I identify as an introvert, like super hard introvert, which my close friends know. Mm-hmm. and would never be like, no, you're not. But people who don't know me are like, you're not an introvert, you're an extrovert. And it used to make me so mad. It used to hurt my feelings and enrage me because I was like, you obviously know nothing about me to say this. Turns out my Myers-Briggs personality test is like, you're the introvert everyone thinks is an extrovert. And I was like, oh, that explains it.
That explains so much.
So I take it less personally now. But anytime you label someone, it's not necessary. It's hurtful to them. Mm-hmm. Or if it's not hurtful, it creates pressure to fulfill expectations. And you don't need to do that to a child or just a child. Yeah. You don't need to make them feel like your love is conditional on how flexible they are. Or like, oh, you're so flexible. Your brother is, he's feisty. I don't recommend ever comparing temperaments with the children in a positive or negative light.
Right.
I think you can reference temperaments and be like, that's just your temperament. Everyone has a temperament. Temperaments are just what they are. There's nothing wrong or right about them. Mm-hmm. They're just part of you. And you can recognize how temperaments affect styles and things like that. You can talk about with this with the children, but avoid any positive or negative judgment. And that's actually super hard to do.
Yeah.
Because we're naturally inclined to deliver judgment.
Right.
So try not to.
And also keep in mind that children are probably naturally inclined to hear judgment.
Yes.
So you're naturally inclined to deliver it. Yes. They're naturally inclined to hear it. Mm-hmm. So just keep that in mind and be extra special careful.
Yes. Especially a child who is feisty or slow to warm up in a family that is not. Uh-huh. Because you are more likely to be, you can sense that you are frustrating your family members. Mm-hmm. And that's really hard. And that feels really bad. And you already worry probably that maybe they won't love you at one point. And when you withhold judgment and you often speak in a non-judgmental tone, implying no positive or negative thing about it, a child's more likely to have less reactions with you because they feel less judged. I think it was Pascal who talked about nonviolent communication on your podcast.
She definitely did.
My roommate has that book and I mean, she's talked to me about it. I can't wait to read it. And when Pascal suggested it, I was like, oh yeah, I should read that book.
And then you'll let me borrow it. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I mean, and just the things my roommate has told me, some of it I've learned from a book called Tell Me No Lies, which I think we've talked about on this podcast about lie inviting behavior. Mm-hmm. Like when you make it clear that there's a right or wrong answer, the person's going to be more likely to lie to you. So that kind of stuff, you can actually change your child's response pattern by lowering like judgment speech. So that's kind of an important thing to remember if your child.
Yeah. And keeping in mind that, I mean, I don't know about all children. This is totally from my personal experience, but in school they're, often is a right or wrong answer or it's presented in that way.
Yes.
And so that habit is being formed.
Yeah.
And so just keeping that in mind.
Yeah.
Because I was very Hermione Granger about
rule follower.
Rule follower. Yeah. And unless I didn't agree with the rule.
And then you're a rule breaker.
Just like Hermione.
I like it.
You switch over. It's a very Gryffindor thing.
I love it.
But yes, I just keep that in mind that at school there's right and wrong and it's a little bit more divided.
Yeah.
And you have the flexibility as a nanny to help them grow in this way.
Absolutely. And when you have tools like Tell Me More or today we were making the child I nanny for's lunch to go to camp. Mm-hmm. And she has applesauce in cups and she has applesauce in a jar. And when we make it, it was oatmeal in a thermos and we add applesauce to it. And I was like, will you grab me a cup of applesauce? And her mom was also in the kitchen. And she's like, I'm going to give you a jar instead. I don't want to give you a cup. And her mom was like, and I was like, oh, could I have a cup though instead? Is that okay? And she was like, no. And I was like, okay. A jar's fine, and I'm fine with using the jar, but could you tell me more about why you want to use the jar instead of the cup so I can just understand where you're coming from? And she had zero, like, she didn't try to fight me. Her tone was totally fine, like it was not aggressive in any way.
Right.
And she was like, yeah, I just want to save the cups for when we don't have jars. And I was like, all right.
Yeah.
And her mom was like, you're so nice. And I was like, well, it's also the education in this right. that helps. But that kind of, it can stop a fight in its tracks
yeah.
if you don't judge and you're just, and you're open-minded. Like mm-hmm. you said, there's no right or wrong. And just,
were you also like, then can you also bring me a spoon?
No, I didn't. I'm really good at pouring things without needing spoons.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah.
When we started making her oatmeal, when I started with them, like, gosh, almost 4 years ago now, what happened was we would use like 8 spoons because it's like flax and brown sugar applesauce and cinnamon and salt and nut mix, which is her allergy mix of nuts, so okay. that she retains her immunity to her former allergies.
Oh.
And raisins. So it's like we were using like 5, and then there was like a mixing spoon, and then there was a tasting spoon. Now we use 1 spoon because I've streamlined the process.
Nice.
I shake it all out of the bag.
Well done.
Or the jar or the applesauce yes. cup. But yeah, so it's just being open-minded, and that will help you so much if you can try to think about things from the child's perspective, to think about ways that they could be right. And also, who cares who's right a lot of times, you know? Is the relationship more important than being right? The answer is pretty much always no, if it's a valuable relationship in your life.
Wait, is the relationship more important than being right? So the answer is yes.
I meant the other way.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I saw you squint your eyes. The answer is always yes.
Doing the
it's
math
never from, more important to be right than it is to maintain a positive relationship with the people you love.
Exactly.
That's the point.
Yes. Yes.
My bad.
No.
It's probably late now. I don't know what time it is.
It's very late. It's 9:30.
Woo! that's my Cinderella time.
Yes.
No, but yes. So that's a really great tactic for helping with feisty children or any child, really.
Yeah. That one's well worth exploring, no matter who you're naming
Absolutely.
For.
Absolutely.
Or just speaking with.
Yes. Or adults or your loved ones.
Yes.
For people or children who have high distractibility, speaking in short, simple directions really helps you mm-hmm. get the results you're looking for, mm-hmm. The cooperation you're needing. I think there's a thing about men and women, too, where they were like, mm-hmm. men stop listening after 4 minutes. Mm-hmm. So you should try to get in the most important points in those first 4 minutes because they're done after that.
Yeah. There's a podcast called The Notable Woman that my friend Kristen Downs makes. And she had a guest on that talked about the difference in raising girls and boys, which I know I've also done an episode on that. But she had...
I think you did too.
But she had a person on that was talking about how boys and language, especially early in their life,
mm-hmm.
and how telling a boy, you know, you need to put on your shoes and then we can go to the park is too much.
Yeah. First shoes, then park.
Yeah. That's to just cut out all that language. So
that's how they teach you in schools too. Mm-hmm. So I work with 3 and 4 year olds in school. The child I nanny for will be 8.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked all around the range though, like 6 months, 3 months, up to I think 10 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important because sometimes it's hard and it's, I mean, for me too, right? Like,
right.
Can you go over that one more time, what I'm supposed to do? So the younger they are too, especially if you can use a first then statement
mm-hmm.
and with the least amount of words possible.
Right.
And developmentally, they can't really follow a 3-step command until they're 4.
Mm-hmm. So keep that in mind.
Shorten it down. Also another way to support children who are of a feisty or a slow to warm up temperament is to limit their choices. So mm-hmm. this might sound like a negative, but it's actually helpful because it takes away the overwhelming part of choosing something from like,
right.
imagine if you, I've experienced this once in the grocery store. You're in a salsa aisle. You're like, I need some salsa. Imagine they have 4 jars of salsa versus like 100.
Right.
And I was like, why are there so many salsas here?
Mm-hmm.
And I was paralyzed. I didn't know what to do. Children also feel that way, but they have less skills and less executive functioning skills at this point to think mm-hmm. through their problems. So if you're like, would you like to go to the park or would you like to take your bath right now? And offering choices gives them a sense of control.
Right.
Which helps them to feel more regulated in their own body, better sense of dignity. You're less likely to get a meltdown.
Mm-hmm. So some choices, and we've talked about letting kids pick their own clothing.
Yes.
But potentially working up from you lay out three outfits to, or three shirts, and like you pick the pants, or you can work your way up to eventually they can choose from anything if they're ready.
Yeah.
If or, and when they're ready. Or some kids just like you drawer. To like help.
Yeah. Some kids, you're like, I'm wanting you to help yourself now.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a hard stage to be in where it they're is. Like, can you help? I'm like, I can, but I'm also working on you solving the problem by yourself right now. So I'm going to suggest you just, instead of the thing you want me to hold, you just take that thing and put it on the ground.
Uh-huh.
And then take the thing you need and then put that other thing back. But I want you to help me. I know. I know you do.
I hear that you want me to help you.
And I want you to learn some problem solving by yourself tactics.
Yes.
So limiting choices, offering dignified choices. It's all very important for children who are struggling. I think the shirt idea is great for like, this is like even laying out the choices that helps them as they work up. Kind of scaffolding is what they call it a lot of times. Respect their preferences. Likewise, so if they're like, "Ooh, I hate this shirt. It's itchy." So maybe you could be like, "Let's talk to your parents and see if we can donate it."
Right.
With the child I nanny for, we go through her drawers together, and she makes a pile of things she thinks she's never going to wear, things that she just doesn't like, or things that she thinks won't fit her anymore.
Okay.
And then we put them in a pile for her mom and dad to review to make sure we're not like donating grandma's.
Yes.
Old confirmation sweater or whatever it is. So they go through it and then I take it to the donation store, whatever's left in the pile. But that helps the child voice their autonomy and helps them learn to sort of self-advocate for what they will and won't do and what they do and don't want. That's great for all temperaments, I would say. That also goes for food. I know people really struggle. Power struggles over food.
Right. Which we have a whole, we have several episodes actually.
Yeah.
That talk about that.
Don't do that. Don't. Yeah. And it's hard not to. Yeah. And it's more likely to lead to an eating disorder for that child. And so don't.
Right.
I understand the temptation to. I also used to be tempted, and it comes from a good place of wanting so much to help the child have proper nutrition and learn to be well-rounded. But kids go on food jags is what they're called, where they're like, I'm only going to eat this one thing. I'm going to have hot dogs for a whole month. And food jags end.
Right.
You can help by providing what's on the plate. But if there is something they really don't like, respect it.
Yeah.
I hate Jell-O.
Right.
I hate it.
Yeah.
Don't give me Jell-O.
It's a texture thing.
Yeah. And I'm going to also be mad at you and more likely to show you I'm mad at you with my actions and less likely to respect you.
I can't eat yogurt.
Yeah.
Alone.
To make you gag?
Yeah. Before 11 a.m.
Really?
If I do it before 11 a.m.
But after 11 you can?
Yeah.
I wonder why.
My gag reflex is always worse in the morning.
That's interesting. So some other strategies you can consider are considering more structure in your schedule, which actually sounds counterintuitive, but really helps the child who is feisty or slow to warm up, because then they know what to expect, as we talked about earlier. This is Martha's. I wrote this. It actually said like a quiet cool down space, but I wrote chill zone.
Chill zone.
Because Martha found a really cool picture on the internet. Go ahead, Martha.
They made it look like Antarctica.
It was so cute.
It was so cute. And so you can put lots of fluffy things that are a good place if you're feeling really angry or upset or just any strong emotion. You can go into the chill zone or the cool down area. Yeah. And it's themed like Antarctica. And it had books with penguins, which helped me feel better.
That helped me feel better too.
Because penguins are so adorable.
Yes, they're so cute. And there's so many different kinds of them.
And they're fascinating.
Adorable, fascinating, variety filled.
Yes.
What more is there to like?
And so, but anyway, the point is that when a child is feeling very upset, they can take themselves to the chill zone or the cool down area and take a few minutes to cool down emotionally. Because in Pascal's episode, I think power struggles with children. Mm-hmm. She talks about how anger literally short circuits your brain.
Yeah.
So you can't think logically when you are angry.
Yeah.
And so
some psychologists call it your lizard brain. It activates your lizard brain, which is like fight or flighty.
Yeah. Fight, flight, or freeze.
Which is, yes, exactly. From a book Martha had me read.
Yes.
Which is why you may notice you have a hard time working out conflicts with people when you're mad.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think Pascal, one of her episodes, I think it was the parent one. She was like, literally never talk about things when you're angry about them. That's a sign you're not ready to talk about it yet.
Yep.
If you're having an emotional response.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. And also, interestingly, I don't know if I've told you about this on the podcast or in person or just as a fun fact, because Martha and I like to share them.
We do.
So I want the listeners to do it too. Think of a time where you felt something really, like a really strong emotion. Or like anxiety, like think about that right now.
Okay.
And now think of the color eggplant. And now think of the taste of pepper and salt in your mouth.
Mm.
And now think of an ice cube on your skin.
Okay.
Are you still feeling those feelings of anxiety and fear or whatever you felt?
No.
That's because your sensory brain can't be engaged at the same time your feeling brain is engaged.
Nice.
So if you are having a high emotional response, or the child you're caring for, perhaps a feisty one, is having a high emotional response, engaging a different part of their brain short circuits their feeling brain.
Yeah.
So sometimes there's a time and a place for that. Sometimes there's not.
Right.
Because sometimes they need
Is that called grounding?
I don't remember. There is a effect, or there's a strategy called grounding for people with anxiety where it's, I can't remember. My friend told me about it, but it's like five things you see, four things you maybe hear, and then taste, touch, and smell.
Right.
And I don't know the order of them, but that's the effect. I think that's the same idea. Is like it brings you out of your anxious response. So that's a fun tactic you can also try with children who are feisty or having
and you're working
any child.
On counting.
Yes, exactly. Also works great for you when you're having an emotional response.
Because we do.
Yeah.
We're humans.
Yes. And that comes with coaching self-control, which is another thing that you need to help feisty or slow to warm up children experience, even flexible children, to be like, hey, if they're yelling, that's actually too loud for my ears. It's hard to hear you. I had a child this past week who is like, I kept having to ask them what they were saying because I don't know why. I just couldn't hear it. I was also doing the dishes and they were like facing away from me. And I was like, what? What? And then the child started screaming every word. They were like, do, you, like. And I was like, I let them finish their sentence. And I said, believe it or not, it's actually still hard. It's still hard for me to hear you when you're yelling.
Right.
But when you speak in a loud, not yelling, calm voice, it helps me to hear you better. So I actually didn't hear that either. And I know it's frustrating to have to repeat it over and over, but do you think you could repeat it one more time? I'm going to turn the water off and look at you.
Right.
And the child did with no problem.
Yeah.
But saying things like that's too loud, or I know you're upset. I can't let you hit your brother or me or whatever it is. Let's go find something we can hit safely, like a pillow or a bed, or sort of respecting their impulses, but giving them self-control to do it safely.
Right.
Because sometimes they do need to let those things out, because if you put a lid on a boiling pot of water, what happens?
It will boil over.
It sure does. Every time.
Yep.
Which is great acting advice,
but
not great emotional regulation advice.
Yeah.
Yes. So coaching self-control and modeling pro-social behavior yourself, which is sort of what you do when you're upset, even walking them through that problem, sharing with them. The kid I nanny for does this all the time. We have snack and she's always like, can I have some of what you're having? Even if she had a choice to have that. And it's hard for me because I'm like, no girl, I got this snack. You have a basket of it over there and you didn't want it.
Right.
But every time I tried to share a little bit with her for the act of her experiencing someone sharing with her every time.
Yeah.
And to see what it's like to have somebody model sharing.
Mm-hmm.
And we use similar phrases of like, I'm feeling really upset right now, because they're like tiny sponges and everything you say and do can and will be used against you or for your benefit later.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure that you're modeling what you want to see happen.
Yes.
That's really one of the surefire ways to teach them something is to make sure your behavior matches.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Thank you. We're coming to the end of my list here. The last one is choose your battles and avoid power struggles. Yes. Which you can listen to the power struggles, avoiding power struggles one.
Yep.
Asking yourself if it's more important to fight about this or argue about this or get your way. Is it more important than the feelings of this tiny human in front of you?
Right.
Probably not more important.
Nope.
I said it right that time.
You did.
Awesome. I saw because Martha's eyes didn't go squinty like she was trying to figure out what I had done wrong.
I diagrammed your sentence.
She did.
Earlier.
She like looked at it.
I'm teaching children how to diagram sentences. I've been doing it in my sleep.
That's hilarious.
Not my nanny kids, guys. Don't worry. These are tutoring students that are older.
Real intent.
I'm not forcing diagramming sentences on just anyone.
Although that'd be fun to do it in the air.
Yes, it would. Or on like the floor.
Yeah.
With tape. And words that can move around. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, that was super helpful. So let's say you are a nanny and...
And I am.
Oh, great. This will be easy pretend. As in it's not pretend, it's real life. But, okay, but there's a second part.
Okay, I'm ready.
Of, and you are listening to this and you're like, oh, I am feisty.
Yeah.
And my kids are flexible or slow to warm up or any combination. You have a different temperament style from your kids and you're listening to this episode and you're like, what?
Yeah.
What are some things a nanny? I mean, a lot of it we just talked about because in meeting your kids where they are, you're also helping yourself.
Yes.
Meet yourself where you are.
Yes.
But we talked at the beginning about how you need to adjust your temperament.
Absolutely.
And so some advice for that I think would be lovely.
Yes. And you feel free to jump in as well because you are also a nanny.
I mean, a lot of it we've talked about in the boundaries episode or the power struggles episode or positive discipline. A lot of it is about self-regulation and modeling good behavior and just being really cognizant of your own habits.
Absolutely. That would be my first note too, is self-awareness. Yeah. So if you are realizing you have or identifying your temperament style, I should say, that's step one.
Mm-hmm.
And then you identifying the temperament styles of the important people around you that you need to interact with is step two.
Great.
I recommend to, not taking things personally that, are a difference in temperament.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes it can feel like someone's ignoring you if they have like a high attention span and low distractibility and that can feel bad. So trying to frame it, and I guarantee you after listening to this episode, you're going to be looking at people and being like, oh, look at that. That person's got a withdrawal and behavior style or behavior trait. And so
because it feels good in our brains to categorize.
Yeah.
So
it helps us to understand the world. And I actually just told the girl I nanny, I was like, she was like, why? We read a book and they were being judgmental in this book. Mm-hmm. And I was like, so in some ways it's good to be judgmental because it helps you understand the world. And in some ways it's bad. And we like broke it down into how and why, which I won't do here for the sake of time. So self-awareness is key with anything you do with kids. Anything too that you can do to calm yourself and remind yourself. Mantras are really helpful in these things. I tend to count to 20, just whenever. whenever I'm frustrated or if I'm waiting for a response from someone, I will count to 20 before I say anything else sometimes because kids, their speech portion of their brain, while their comprehensive language is larger when they're younger than, their receptive language is larger than their active vocabulary.
Right.
And it takes some time to actually think about what they want to say, then spit it back out towards you.
Right.
And it takes time. So not expecting an immediate response.
And keeping in mind, you can't unsay words.
Yes, absolutely.
So you can work to fix the hurt
yes.
that words might have done, but you can't unsay them.
Yeah.
So slow and steady wins this race.
Yeah. And finding ways to meet both temperament styles, I think, would also help. So like mm-hmm. if you have a high activity level need as a nanny mm-hmm. And the child has a low one, maybe you have a portion of the day where they go, Martha, do 20 jumping jacks. I'm going to count 1, 2. And they like sit. They get to sit and yeah. watch you and you do the activity. So like right. you can balance both. You can meet the needs of both. Or that would be a great activity if you have two children with different temperament.
Yeah.
Twister would be a good way to do that too, because someone has to be the spinner.
Right.
Finding ways to include everybody. Try not to exclude people just because they're not the same temperament style as mm-hmm. maybe you and one of the children or two of the children, whatever it is.
Obstacle courses are also great for that.
Yeah. You need a timer. Somebody's yep. got to time that. So finding ways to meet those needs. I would also say if you, like for me, I sometimes need quiet time. Mm-hmm. The child that I nanny for could and would talk to me all day long. Mm-hmm. Which is great. And I love talking to her. Mm-hmm. And sometimes her mom's like, she comes home and the kid's like bouncing around. And she's mm-hmm. like, is she like this all day? And I was like, sometimes she is. Yeah. But we have created a schedule. Mm-hmm. So, and that's partly because I do well with schedules. She knows what to expect. She's got a portion of play alone time. We have like several portions of the day where we play together mm-hmm. in intervals that we both find digestible.
Right.
we have reading time together. She has time to practice the piano. We have days where we forget it all and go have an adventure.
Yeah.
So that way, she does take an hour of quiet time too, although she gets to choose between 45 minutes to an hour, mm-hmm. What she wants to take that day.
Right.
And so finding ways to balance the schedule for both sets of needs is really important, because even a child who has a low activity threshold does need some activity.
Right.
And so if you can find a way, and it does take experimentation, but find a way to meet both needs if you can.
Yeah. That's great advice. Yeah. Awesome. Well, I feel like we talked about a lot.
Yeah. I would love to hear if anybody else has suggestions on how to meet those, how yeah. to balance difference in temperaments, if they have any, recommendations.
Yeah.
That they've seen work or want to try now.
I would love that as well. You can write into chroniclesofnania@gmail.com or you can message me on Instagram at Ooh. Chronicles of Nania. I've had people reach out to me.
That's awesome.
Via that or on Facebook. I don't check Twitter often, guys. I'm sorry. I'm being honest.
She's a low sensitivity or high sensitivity for her Twitter threshold.
I can't deal with it. I need more words than Twitter gives me.
That's fair.
And so so maybe don't contact me via Twitter, but the other ways, go for it. And also, if you're listening and you're like, but I have this and you guys didn't really address it.
Yeah.
And you think it fits into this, or if it doesn't, if you just have a question, reach out, because I love talking to people. I love talking to nannies.
One might say that you have a high approach.
I do.
Yeah.
Yes, I was probably very kidnappable as a child. But now I'm not.
I wonder if that's the 10th. I guess that's actually technically approach withdrawal.
But yeah, exactly.
Kidnappability.
Awesome. Okay, so we end each episode with a fun, cute story or quote. And Katie has brought one. Thanks,
yes.
Katie.
Yes, you're welcome. So the child I nanny for has been really interested in art lately and what's happening in my life. And every Monday we're like, let me tell you all about my weekend. Mm-hmm. And we talk for a while about what we did. And she knows, so this coming weekend, or I guess when this episode airs, I will be officiating a wedding in California.
Oh, yeah.
And we've been talking about it a lot. And she's been like, can I hear the wedding ceremony? Because I wrote it,
uh-huh.
minus the vows. They wrote the vows. And I was like, I haven't read her the wedding ceremony, but she's been hearing about pretty much every step in the process. And she was like, what does your dress look like? And I was like, we're debating which one. And then I got a dress, the one that the bride was like, I really want you to probably wear this one.
Uh-huh.
So I got it altered because it was a little too robust in the chest area for mm-hmm. me. Harder to cover mine.
Right.
And so I had it fixed so it was not so gratuitous.
Uh-huh.
And she saw it today because we picked up her mom's dry cleaning, and the dry cleaner was like, here's also the dress that you had me fix for you. So she was so excited. It's like a formal evening gown looking one.
Ooh.
And she's never seen me in anything like that. And so during her quiet time, she drew a picture.
Uh-huh.
And she came out of her quiet time to be like, Katie, what shoes are you going to wear? Are you going to wear flats like your normal shoes that you always wear? Or are you going to wear heels? And I was like, I won't be wearing heels. We'll be in a vineyard. I might wear sandals, but I haven't decided yet.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, okay, but do you think you will wear sandals? And I was like, probably. And she goes back into her room. And then she comes out and she goes, Katie, I know that the groom's name is Tom, but I can't remember the bride's name. I know it starts with a T. And I was like, it's Tori. And she was like, okay, stay right there. And I was like, okay. And she comes out of her quiet time with this picture that she has drawn. Oh. I had asked her, I was like, are you making a card? And she's like, no, it's a surprise. So it's this picture she's drawn of me in my dress with strappy sandals. So it looks like I'm wearing the sandals. And it says Katie, and it's got the back of the groom's head and his body and the bride's head and her body. And it's got their names over it. And I took a picture of it and I sent it to the bride because I was like, oh, can I please send this picture to the bride? Because she's really nervous about her wedding. Uh-huh. She's really excited to get married, but she's nervous about all the people looking at her. Mm-hmm. And she was like, yeah, okay. Don't tell her who it's from, though. And I was like, okay, I won't. So I took a picture and I said, good news. Your wedding's going to go great. Here's the plan. This is what it's going to look like. And I sent her the picture and she laughed hysterically. And she was like, did the little girl you nanny for draw that? And I said, what should I say? Tell. And she said, tell her no. And I said, okay, I'm going to say this. She says no, she didn't, .. which might be a lie. And then it just brought her so much joy. Yeah. And so I am going to bring it to the wedding.
Yes.
And I'd be like, here's the plan, you guys. This is me and this is you two. And that's what we're going to do.
Amazing.
It's awesome.
I love that. Yeah. That's so sweet, too.
Yeah, it is. It's really cute.
She cares so much.
She does. And the drawing is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet. I've seen her drawing skills.
Yeah,
they are.
I
awesome.
Might send you the picture later.
Please do.
Maybe we can post it on the Chronicles of Nanny page.
If she gives permission.
Yeah, I'll ask her.
Yeah, because I would want her permission before publishing her art.
I'll be like, girl, because sometimes I call her that.
Uh-huh.
Like, I told a story about your beautiful wedding plan. Can Miss Martha post it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just check with her.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For all of this.
Yes, you're welcome.
And
so much of it, too.
I know, but it was great. And thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.
Chronicles of Nania is produced and hosted by Martha Reddick. Artwork by Noni Amadon. Theme music by Brad Kemp. Find him at secondbedroomstudio.com. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Chronicles of Nania and on Twitter at Nania Podcast. To contact us, email chroniclesofnania@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
This show has been brought to you by Machine Culture.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.